Would like to take a look tonight at a topic which is going to look at a midrash, which is a pretty well-known midrash, but I hope to look at it again maybe through a fresh set of eyes. And the topic is a mountain upon their heads and ours. It's a well-known midrash about, which we'll see in a moment, it's a well-known midrash that Hashem seemed to have coerced Bnei Yisrael into accepting the Torah. It's fraught with all types of difficult questions. But I'd like to take a look at the midrash and analyze it on its own from its own perspective. So, if you take a look at the first source on your sheet here, we have the pasuk in Shmos: "Vayotze Moshe es ha'am likrasa Elohim min ha'machane vayisyatzvu betachtis ha'har." Moshe led the people out of the camp towards Hashem, and they took their place at the foot of the mountain. Now, these last words at the end of the pasuk are very problematic. Vayityatzvu betachtit ha'har. If you had a more complicated way to express that idea, I'll wager that you don't, because it's a pretty simple thing to say. They stood at the foot of the mountain, but vayityatzvu could simply be replaced by a much more common word like vayamdu. They stood, and betachtit ha'har is also a rather esoteric word, and if you want to say at the foot of the mountain, perhaps raglei ahar, if that's a biblical phrase, or keneged ahar, next to the mountain. But this strange word betachtit ahar, both of these words cause the rabbis of the Talmud as well as the commentaries to struggle with what it is that the pasuk is intending to impart, and thus Rashi, citing the Medrash source quoted here in Masechta Shabbos. Let's see, I have to move this aside so I can see. Masechta Shabbos, page 88a, says the Gemara, "Amar Rav Avdimi Bar Chama Bar Chasa." What is the purpose of this strange terminology that they yityatzvu betachtit ahar, a weird way to say that they stood at the bottom of the mountain? Milamed shekafa kadosh baruch hu aleihem es har kegigis, that God took the mountain, Mount Sinai, and turned it over their heads like a gigis. V'yomar lahem, and he said to them, im atem mekablim haTorah mutav, if you accept the Torah, all well and good. V'yim lav, and if you don't accept the Torah, shem teik furaschem, there will be your grave right there. Amar Ravacha bar Yaakov, Ravacha bar Yaakov commented, this is indeed has to be one of the greatest historical caveats in all of history. Mikan moda'a rabba la'oraisa. Here God gave the Jewish people the greatest out of all time. For if they would, in fact, violate the Torah, they could always protest, well, you forced it on us. A religious coercion, what did you expect? Amar Rava. Rava says, Afal piche, nevertheless, Hadur kiblua bimecha chashverosh. Even if apparently the Jewish people were coerced into accepting the Torah at the time of Sinai, nevertheless, they willingly, voluntarily, and without coercion, accepted the Torah once again in the time of Achashverosh, in the time of Purim. And this is based on a read of the pasuk in the Megillah, taking the words kimu v'kiblu, which has a specific meaning in the Megillah, and reinterpreting it to mean kimu mashikiblu kvar, that at the time of Purim, the Jewish people fulfilled what they had originally accepted, i.e., they originally were coerced into the covenant, and now they were accepting it voluntarily. Now, this midrash is fraught with difficulty. The pasuk on which the midrash is built is fraught with difficulty, and the midrash itself is fraught with difficulty. It cannot simply mean that God coerced the Jewish people to accept the Torah, because if that were the case, the Chachamim would say, God coerced the Jewish people to accept the Torah. But the fact that the Chachamim word this apparently coercive experience, that God took a mountain, turned it over them. So what does that mean? That God took the mountain and kafa, he turned it over on top of them. Secondly, if you analyze this medrash, it says he placed it over their heads, turned it upside down, kigigis. What exactly is a gigis? Rashi tells us a gigis is, or in other places in the Talmud, Gigas means either a keg or a barrel, like a barrel of wine, or some type of canister. So God took the mountain, turned it over on them like a keg of beer or a barrel of wine, and he says to them, if you want to accept the Torah, well and good, and if not, shum tehek furaschem. And this gets us to our third anomaly here in the Midrash. God is speaking to them right in this place. Shum means there. Po means here. So why does God in this rendition of the Midrash say that if you don't accept the Torah, there will be your burial place? No, right here should be your burial place. What is shum? It's reminiscent of, you know, we're Shavuos, but we could talk about Hanukkah for a second. Everybody remembers the dreidel. Nes Gadol Haya Shum is how the dreidel spins in Chutz La'aretz. But the dreidel in Eretz Yisrael is Nes Gadol Haya Po. Right? Po means here, Shum is there. So it's very odd that God would be saying to them, if you don't accept the Torah, you will be buried there. Where is there? Finally, Rav Acha responds to this statement and to this story of the Jewish people's coercion, and he says, well, even if they were coerced initially, they accepted it at the time of Achashverosh. Now, there's a lot of history between Sinai and Purim, and it seems to me somewhat strange that the first time that the Jewish people might be able to be associated with a voluntary acceptance of the Torah is Purim, many thousands of years, at least a thousand years later. At least we had the hundreds of years of the Shoftim. We had 400 years of the first Beis Hamikdash. Then we had another 70 years of the exile, and in the middle of that 70-year period, or maybe at the end of the 70-year period, so we have the Persian period and the time of Achashverosh. So we're talking about, a good millennium. So there's nothing between Sinai and Purim that could possibly be addressed as a time when the Jewish people accepted the Torah voluntarily. So the pasuk upon which this midrash is built is problematic. And the midrash itself is clearly calling out for some type of interpretation as well. So that's going to be our goal here in our next 20 minutes, to look at some, not all, there are quite a few approaches to understanding this midrash. And in doing so, I hope to perhaps offer us a message which is relevant to Shavuos and to our experience as Torah Jews. So Tosfos looks at this statement in the Talmud and asks the question. And the question is, even if you take this medrash at face value, the whole medrash itself is problematic, because didn't the Jewish people say Nasa v'nishma? Didn't they say we will do and we will hear and we will obey? So how can you say that the Jewish people were coerced? Kaf aleihem har kegigis, says Tosfos. Even though originally the Jewish people seem to have already accepted the Torah voluntarily, in other versions, the concern, say the Balei Tosfos, was that although the Jewish people committed to the deal, when they actually came to sign on the dotted line, they were going to run away. They would see and hear the fire and the fury at Sinai, and they would be so scared they would run away. And in order to ensure that the Jewish people wouldn't run away, so God put them in this coercive moment so they couldn't run away. If you think about Sinai and Har Sinai as the marriage, as is often the rabbis refer to it, the marriage between Hashem and the Jewish people, or the Torah. So we can say that this was to ensure that the groom didn't run off, didn't run away from the altar, as it were. So that's what the Balei Tosfos say. Now, what that seems to indicate is that the message here is that a voluntary acceptance of the Torah is insufficient. To do it voluntarily is not sufficient. They need to have signed on the dotted line. And that was so important, to be bound in the covenant, that God, quote-unquote, forced them and did not allow them to give in to their fears. and help to steal them against their last minute jitters to run away, to run off from the altar, leaving the bride under the wedding canopy, if I can mix metaphors there. So the message is that volunteer Judaism isn't sufficient. The Torah is about commitment. And when the tough get going, the volunteers go. In other words, to be a volunteer, I'm not saying anything bad about volunteers, but the beauty of volunteerism is that we do things out of our desire. But the downside of volunteerism is that when it's not convenient and it doesn't fit into what I need or my convenience or my time schedule or my other commitments, so the volunteer obligation goes by the wayside. So the Torah cannot be a volunteer experience. As much as we want to do the Torah out of desire, what the Balei Tosfos seem to be saying, the message here of the Medrash is that volunteerism isn't good enough. We need a sense of commitment, and that is the beauty and the passion of Sinai, to live a life of commitment. So on one level, Shavuot celebrates this commitment element of the Torah, responsibility through commitment, not responsibility through volunteerism. And a second idea, perhaps, that this Medrash is offering through the eyes of the Balei Tosfos, is that God didn't actually remove their free will. God restored it. How do I say that? Because they were so frightened that they weren't able to see the awesomeness of the moment. And so they would have run away. So it wasn't a level playing field. Hashem didn't steal their resolve in order to take away their freedom of choice. God stealed their resolve in order to ensure that they retained their freedom of choice. Because if I'm so scared, if I'm so afraid, then that's not a real choice. That's not a real choice to make. So say the Balei Tosfos I think the second idea here is that the message is that their essential element of Torah living and Torah Judaism is the power of bechira, of freedom to choose. But sometimes we confuse the freedom to choose with the freedom to do what we want. But the freedom to choose means that we are able to rationally, thoughtfully look at the pros and cons and make a decision what we want to do. If I am gripped by fear, or if I am gripped by lust, or if I am gripped by appetite, or if I am gripped by a psychological depression, if I am gripped by anything, then my freedom of choice, in a certain sense, has been ripped away. And thus, what the Medrash is telling us here is exactly the opposite of what we often think. We often, the common way of reading this Medrash is that God stole our freedom of choice. God coerced us. But in fact, in the context of what was going on, say the Balei Tosfos, that God actually restored their ability to make a sound choice. Bechira Chofshis, that's message number two, is essential to the Jews at the foot at Har Sinai. A third approach here is the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma asks the same question, but comes to a different answer. Two sides of the same coin, you'll see in a moment. Melamed Shekaf Alein Har Kegigis, this pasuk, the Jews standing at the bottom of the mountain, is to tell us that God turned the mountain over them. Perush, Sheher Lahem Kavod Hashem Behakitz Uvehitgalut Nifla'a, Ad kimamash batla bechirasam. The Meshech Chachma says, indeed, their bechira was taken away from them. But it's not that the bechira was taken away from them because they were coerced. Their bechira was taken away from them because for a moment they had absolute clarity of vision. If I see a fire in front of me, would I take my hand and put it in the fire? Obviously not. Would you say that my freedom of choice had been was robbed You wouldn't say that either. It's just that the choice is so abundantly clear that I would never put my hand in a burning fire. And the Meshech Chachma says that God gave the Jewish people a gift at Har Sinai. And the gift was, for one brief moment, they were muchrachim kimalachim below Hevdel. They were forced like angels without the ability to discern. In other words, they were on such a level of spiritual purity, if you want to say it that way. But more precisely, God gave them clarity of vision. Right? The rabbis tell us that when the Jews came out of Mitzrayim, they were on this high level of prophecy. But at the end of the day, what I think it all comes down to is that they were able to see right from wrong, truth from falsehood, God from a pagan society around them. And thus, in that moment, they were able to seize. Indeed, that's the only choice that they could have made, because the choice was so abundantly clear. Let's go back to our marriage metaphor. You know, when a groom and a bride, or a young man and a young woman are engaged, or they become engaged, there is clarity about what they want to do. They want to get married and build a life together. There's a sense of intensity and intimacy. But that's a moment in time. That clarity does not necessarily persist for every day of one's married life. Indeed, some people run away from the altar, right? When they get cold feet and they run away from the canopy, from the wedding canopy. But this is the gift that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave them. But it's a double-edged sword, because you can't live like that your whole life. When there's no choice, when things are so abundantly clear, then indeed you're not really living a life, a true, real human life. You might be living a life of an angel. But God doesn't call us to live the life of an angel. God calls upon us to live the life of a human being. And as such, kaf aleihem har gigigus, in the conception of the Meshech Chachma, does not mean that God robbed them of their free will. It means that God, in this one historic moment, afforded the Jewish people clarity, divine clarity. And it wasn't a question. Sometimes things are so clear, life and death, you jump off the cliff, nobody's going to do that. Who would make a choice to let the mountain drop on their head? No one. And that's the metaphor of the Medrash. Not that God actually coerced them, but God gave them clarity. It's a bracha. And that is something that sort of nationally is ingrained into our psyche as a Jewish people. And although real life is full of the gray and it's hard sometimes to make it out, and when we're unsure about things, we have to hearken back to that moment. And we do hearken back to that moment, even if subconsciously. For thousands of years, Klal Yisrael have lived off of that moment of clarity. And there's been a lot of murkiness, a lot of gray. And that's part of living. It's part of, as my father, Olav HaShalom, would say, part of the human condition. And it indeed is the human condition. But the Jews at Har Sinai were given a gift of a divine spark in that moment. So that's what the Meshech Chachma suggests. Let me skip down a little bit here for a moment. All of these approaches that we have said thus far really only help us to explain the Medrash in part, because we had all those questions about the Medrash, but all of these approaches really just tell us try to explain to us what it means that God coerced the Jewish people. So some say that God coerced them because they needed to coerce him, and they didn't coerce them. But it doesn't really answer any of our other questions regarding the entire metaphor of the Medrash. Why is the Har Sinai referred to as a gigis, as a beer keg? Why are the Jewish people? What does it mean that God flipped it over their head? Why does Hashem say you're going to be buried over there, not over here? And what is the conclusion of the Medrash? That in the time of Purim, the Jewish people were ultimately accepted the Torah, not by coercion. Ben Yehoyada asks many of these questions and gives us some additional insight. Ben Yehoyada says, Nira Li, it's right on the top of your screen over here, Nira Li, that's where it starts, Nira Li, B'siyata Deshmaya, Ki Hem Kiblu Torah Shebichtav, Kifi Mashi Yagidu. Ben Yehoyada and others suggest that when the Jewish people said Naaseh V'Nishma, it was Naaseh V'Nishma on the written Torah, what was clear and legible and without without too much difficulty. That's what they said Naaseh V'Nishma to. However, that's just the pshat. Lo hayu rotzin lekabel Torah sheba'al peh asher b'chol teva v'teva hamikra tola batilim tilim shel halachos. The Jewish people were not interested, or they did not accept all the oral law, right? The the famous joke. It's a little bit of a cynical joke that Moshe comes to Hashem and he says, "Lo sevashel gedi b'chalei v'imo." What does it mean, that you're not allowed to cook a kid in its mother's milk? So Moshe says, does it mean, you're not allowed to, have milk and meat together? So God says, no, it means don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. Does it mean that you have to have two sets of dishes? No, it just means don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. Does it mean that, and he goes on with all the, various halachas that we know. And at some point Hashem says, okay, that's what it means. In other words, although that is somewhat of a cynical joke, but the Klal Yisrael were not prepared to take upon themselves the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And that, says the Ben Yehoyada, is why this, what happened at Har Sinai, God indeed did coerce them regarding the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And he says that is the metaphor of the mountain as a barrel of wine. It's a barrel of wine because there are millions and millions and millions of drops of wine in a barrel. And the barrel might hold it, but there's much more to the barrel than the barrel. And that, he says, is the metaphor of Sinai. Sinai was a barrel, like a barrel of wine over their head. But again, this approach, I think, leaves us also somewhat wanting. It might explain to us a little bit about the metaphor of the barrel of wine, but it leaves a lot unanswered as well. In our remaining moments, I would like to share with you the following thought. I think that, let's go. We're going to go back to the Kli Yakar. I can't pass it up. I'm sorry. We'll just do a short piece of the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar says the following. It asks the same questions and provides his own answer, and he says that Harei atem chashuvim kemes, that the Jewish people were given a choice: accept the Torah or the mountain over their head. Theoretically, would be dropped. And the Kli Yakar says that the Jewish people here are basically being told, Kol zman she'ein atem mekablim haTorah, as long as you don't accept the Torah, Harei atem chashuvim kemesim gam b'chayechem, you're dead even while alive. V'moseichem ein lachem shum hasharos el hashama tekvurashem. U'mesim bal yichyu rifam bal yakumu. It says a person who doesn't live a life of Torah will ultimately be, in a sense, living a life of death. What is the Kli Yakar getting at here? The Kli Yakar says that Hashem didn't force anyone to do anything, but rather that our mission in life is to live a life guided by the values, the precepts, the laws, and the ideals of the Torah. And the Torah offers meaning and purpose. If you don't want to have a midlife crisis, whether midlife is 20, 40, 60, 80, 90, or 120, then the Torah offers a way out. It is meaning. It is purpose. But if you don't accept the Torah, you might as well call it quits now, because your grave stands right in front of you. It's a life of meaninglessness. Your grave stands in front of you because a life without a spiritual journey of ascent, well, you are going to end up right here, having gone nowhere. So again, the Kli Yakar attempts to tell us how this was not really a coercion, but this was God doing it for the benefit of the people, giving them in stark relief what the purpose and value of the Torah is. And this is message number 4 in our messages here, that the Torah is meant to provide us not simply a way of living, a guide of what to do and what not to do, but it's to provide depth and purpose. Okay, I'd like to share with you one final thought. And this final thought, let us go back to where we started. Kaf aleihem har kegigis. The key to understanding this midrash, I believe, is the fact that it is compared to a gigis, which is a barrel of wine or a keg of beer, as Rashi says. And what does this mean? Hashem gave the Jewish people a choice. As I said earlier, Judaism is not a fair weather friend. It's not just during the good times. It challenges us and sustains us even during the very tough times. Vayityatzvu betachtis ahar. The Jewish people, they didn't just stand at the mountain, but vayityatzvu, something happened to them there. They were strengthened. They stood there straight and they were transformed. Betachtis ahar means that Hashem showed them the mountain like a keg of beer or a barrel of wine. In other words, he said, you have a choice, B'nai Israel. You can choose Judaism, you can choose Torah only for the good times, the barrel of wine, or you can be mekabel the Torah. You can accept the Torah in its entirety. If you accept the Torah in its entirety, then mutav, how wonderful that will be. But if not, Shom Tehek Furaschem, he's telling them, look at the mountain. There, that will be your undoing. Chasing the wine, chasing the beer. In other words, a life stripped of a Torah, of a complete Torah commitment, is a life in which maybe not today, and maybe not tomorrow, but it's ultimately your undoing. Shom, over there, down that path, down that journey, that is your that will be your undoing. That will be your burial place. We need to accept the Torah in its entirety and for the entirety of our life experience. Otherwise, the whole enterprise just falls apart. And this was tested at Purim time. Purim is the holiday of wine. We followed the wine in Persia. We wanted to fit in, to let the good times roll. But ultimately, that proved to be our undoing. And this then is the realization in Purim that we need to accept the whole Torah for our whole life experience. They stood at Sinai and Hashem said, I'll give him a choice. You want the wine only or do you want the whole package? The wine only leads to a really terrible conclusion. I suggest the whole package. Shom Tehek Furaschem was not a coercion. It wasn't a threat. It was just simply telling them good advice. And it is that good advice that has allowed the Jewish people to sustain for millennia. And it is that good advice that on an individual level has allowed many of us to get through really tough times. And even because our relationship with the Torah is not one of a gigis, is not one of a barrel of wine or a keg of beer. We are there for the Torah to sacrifice and to commit a life of responsibility. And the Torah is there for us to get us through our challenges and our moments of difficulty. And perhaps as we get to this Shavuos, and we think about God standing at the foot of the mountain and God lifting the mountain on top of us, we'll perhaps understand that the mountain was upon their heads, but it is upon ours as well. I wish you all a good Yontif and a Chag Sameach. Thank you for listening. And it is my pleasure now to introduce Rachel Weinstein for our final shiur. There we go.
Thank you, Rabbi. First of all, thank you for Kingsway for inviting me to speak on this auspicious night. And it's quite daunting to be the last speaker in this amazing series. And I'm wondering if everybody's sitting there and thinking, is there anything she could possibly tell us that I haven't heard about Chesed, about Rut, about Kingdom, David HaMelech, Mamad Har Sinai? And so I sort of stand here a little bit with trepidation, and and I'm hoping that I could still surprise you a little bit. I want to dedicate this shiur for the aliyah of the neshama of my parents, Fegaleya Bat, Rav Abraham Yaakov,